The Very Thought of You, written by Mary Fitzgerald, read by Penelope Freeman. The moral right of the author has been asserted. Chapter 1. London, Spring 1944. She watched the boy as he cycled slowly up the street. He was looking at the numbers on the doors of the red brick terrace. Then, satisfied that they were properly running in order, he speeded up. There was no hesitation in her movement away from the window, because she knew. She'd been expecting it for 2 years. And when the knock came, Catherine opened the door and held out her hand.
"Are you?"
The telegraph boy hesitated, studying the name on the brown envelope.
"Mrs. Fletcher? Mrs. Catherine Fletcher?"
"Yes," she said. Strangely, she felt quite calm. But her mother, Honorine, who had come from the back kitchen with 6-month-old Lily in her arms, whispered,
"Mon Dieu! Mon Dieu!"
and sat down heavily on the second step of the flight of stairs.
"Sorry,"
the telegraph boy said awkwardly, as he put the envelope in Catherine's upturned palm. He was 15, and this was his second week at work, but he knew what the telegram contained, and he wouldn't look Catherine in the eye. But this woman was composed, quiet, almost normal, and he was the one who felt unnerved and gripped the handlebars of his bike tightly as he climbed on it.
"Draw,"
he said, and didn't look back as he cycled rapidly down the street and round the corner. Catherine turned the envelope over in her hands.
"I have to open it," she told herself. "Now, this minute. But, oh God, if I do, it will become real."
She closed the door and walked back into the small front room. It was a room she was proud of, clean and well furnished, with 2 comfortable armchairs and an Afghan rug. Fitted bookcases filled the gaps on either side of the fireplace, full of books, mostly unread now, but dusted every day. There were 2 photographs on the cream-tiled mantelpiece. One was of her in a long dress, standing in front of a microphone, while arranged behind her was the band Bobby Crewe's Melody Men. She'd been their singer, and had been so good that other bands had started sniffing around, eager to poach her. But it was the other photograph she lingered over. It was of her on her wedding day, and she stood for a moment staring at it. What a lovely day it had been, and how happy and proud she'd felt in her neat suit, with her arm tucked securely in Christopher's. The photograph was in black and white, but she saw the scene in colour. Her sky-blue suit with its narrow belt and box pleats, and Christopher's khaki uniform and his maroon cap with the winged badge of the parachute regiment. Everyone said what a handsome couple they were. Catherine so pretty with her shiny dark hair and enigmatic brown eyes, and Christopher tall and strong, with an athleticism that belied his peacetime job as a college lecturer. He looked as if nothing could ever hurt him. But now? She swallowed and turned round to face her mother and her baby daughter. Both were silent, but tears were beginning to spill from her mother's eyes.
"Open it, cherie," her mother whispered. "You have to know."
100 miles away from that street in London, Frances Parnell groaned as she heaved a sack of potatoes into the larder. She'd just driven it from the home farm where Seth, the old tenant, had told her it was the last he had.
"West has gone to the military," he said, chewing on his empty pipe. "Buggers have taken everything."
"I hope they paid you," Frances said.
She was concerned because Seth and Bessie, his wife, were on their own now. Both their boys were in the services, and although they did have a farmhand, he was older than Seth and no real help at all.
"Gave me a chitty," Seth grunted. "We'll get the money, but it'll take a few weeks."
They were in the farmhouse kitchen, and Bessie put a pot of tea and a plate of scones on the table.
"Take one, lovey," she smiled at Frances. "I got more in the pantry. And take a couple home for Johnny."
"Thanks,"
Frances said, and smiled back at this woman she'd known all her...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?